I'll be presenting the next talk. We make a transition to and geography. And this talk will be on physiological assessment of coronary artery disease based on angiographic image data. I'll start with some background material, then go to some design rules of coronary artery tree, and then talk about technique for measuring lumen volume, coronary lumen volume and blood flow, and then talk about fractional flow reserve measurement technique. Start with the background material. Here is a coronary coronary angiogram, and you can see stenosis. So question is this physiologically significant? Should an intervention be done? In the case of intermediate level stenosis, these are not easy questions. So that's what we will focus on. I'll start with some with an overview of coronary circulation. What we have here is basically the aorta, a coronary with a stenosis, and here we have myocardial vascular bed, venous system, and the right atrium. In absence of a stenosis, the flow is determined by the resistance of the vascular bed. And flow can range basically maximal flow after maximal hyperemia can range from anywhere from 3 to 5. So when you have a stenosis here, in baseline flow, the resistance here drops to maintain a steady flow. Basically, you can think of this as a stenosis is a fixed resistor, and the vascular bed here as a variable resistor. So the system tries to minimize the resistance by decreasing the resistance in the vascular bed to maintain the flow. This variable resistor has a range, so when you go at a minimum resistance, then the system still has capacity to bring some blood flow by collateral flow. So in this case, basically what you do, you shunt some flow from some blood from a neighboring artery that would be normal to the diseased artery to still maintain the flow. So basically, as in this case here, you have a stenosis, and then you basically you have a resistance due to the stenosis, and then resistance due to the myocardial bed. So that's so when we go to coronary blood flow, this is some studies from Lance Gould. You can see as here you have on the x-axis, you have the flow, and as a function of percent diameter stenosis, you can see the baseline flow is steady till about 75% stenosis and then drops very quickly. When you go to maximum hyperemia, the flow starts dropping at approximately 30 to 40% and then starts to drop. When you have a mild stenosis, in this case here, or when you have a critical stenosis, you know, let's say above 75%, basically the answers are obvious. This is in the cardiac cath lab. Mild stenosis would not require any intervention, whereas a critical stenosis would. In the intermediate range, meaning between approximately 30 to 70%, that's more complicated, and that's what we'll focus on. So intermediate coronary lesions, between 30 to 70% diameter stenosis, the question is, can you distinguish ischemia-producing from non-ischemia-producing lesions? And can you do this in a cardiac cath lab? Normally, you assess the stenosis using visual interpretation. There are well-known problem with this. First, you just basically look at the anatomy. There's large error in terms of even when you do quantitative analysis in terms of measuring the percent diameter stenosis. You need a normal region that's sometimes difficult to find. And, previous studies have shown, about 11% variability from reader to reader. The current available technology to assess physiological assessment of coronary lesion is coronary flow reserve. It measured using a Doppler sensor. Also, you have fractional flow reserve. Pressure wire is used. Both of these basically have complementary information, but they each have their own limitations. Start with fractional flow reserve. It's defined as the maximum achievable flow, maximum hyperemia over baseline. It has a range of 3 to 5, usually CFR, coronary flow reserve of 2 is considered to be disease. The problem with this is variability in baseline flow. Usually you have elevated baseline flow due to other disease. So then the CFR starts to change. The newer technique is fractional flow reserve. It's defined as the flow in a disease state. So here is an artery with a stenosis, so the flow in this artery over the flow in the same artery if that lesion was not there. Normally, this is done using measuring pressure measurements. So you have a pressure drop across a stenosis, so you measure pressure in the aorta, and then you measure the pressure distal to that stenosis. Again, the fractional flow reserve is the fraction of maximum achievable myocardial flow. So that's due to stenosis. Previous studies have shown that fractional flow reserve 0.75 is ischemia producing. So right now, the way it's measured, you measure the aortic pressure, and then measure the distal pressure, and the ratio of that gives you FFR. And you measure it using a pressure wire. The most recent technology to do this is a combination wire. This is similar to an interventional wire. It's 14 thousandths of an inch. At the end, it has a sensor to measure flow velocity and pressure. And then there's a console where you can measure both velocity and pressure. The limitation for pressure-based FFR is first it's invasive, meaning that you have to put that wire across the stenosis in order to measure the FFR. It has other limitations, meaning that it ignores zero flow pressure. So the actual FFR is calculated using this term, not this approximate term. So there is the zero flow or venous pressure that you have to subtract, and also the resistance. The assumption here is that the resistance in the normal and disease are the same. That's not necessarily true. So our hypothesis is to try to measure angiographic FFR, meaning that we try to measure FFR using just angiographic image data. It's basically be less invasive because you measure both physiologic information and anatomic information using the same images, and it measures flow, so it has conceptually more accurate. So again, to measure FFR, we just measure flow in a disease state. That could be measured directly, but then we need to know what the flow would have been if that stenosis was not there. That is the challenge, because we have to, we don't know what the flow would have been. So we have to find a parameter that correlates with flow. And in this case, we will use a vascular volume to estimate the flow. So then we'll go to go over some design rules for coronary artery tree for doing that. There is a concept called allometric scaling law, and what you have here on the x-axis is the metabolic rate. On the y-axis, the metabolic rate, and then on the x-axis is the body mass. And this, if you relate these two, anywhere from a mouse to an elephant, there is a parallel relation here, where B here is the scaling parameter, M is the body mass, and Y is the metabolic rate. So we use a similar concept in the coronary artery tree. We'll define here, we just define some parameters. If you have the tree here, a coronary artery tree, here would be the stem. That's what we would measure the flow. And then all the arteries distal to that point are the crown. Or if you go to a smaller stem, then the crown will be smaller. So when we talk about vascular volume, it means the vascular volume distal to that point, to the end point of the arteries. Here are some design rules with the power law. If we relate flow in the arterial tree to the length of the artery, here is the proportionality constant, and then the vascular volume crown volume to the length here. If you relate, combine these two, you get a relationship between flow and vascular volume. We basically focus on this because both flow and vascular volume are measurable in the cath lab, and they can be done in a short time. Arterial length could also be used, but it's, you have to go through a 3D reconstruction that it's a little bit more time-consuming. Here are some flow simulation results done in three arterial trees where they're reconstructed down to a capillary that's about 8 microns. So you start with a tree about vessel about 3.5 millimeter. In diameter, go down to 8 micron. If you relate the vascular volume to the flow, you see this power law, and you have this 3/4 factor. That's the same as the allometric scaling law that I talked about earlier. But you can see that as you go to smaller arteries, so this here would be the entire tree, that LAD or LCX and RCA, the three coronary arteries, but as you get to a smaller diameter, you see this dispersion. The same behavior is seen in PET studies as you get to smaller regions. If we truncate the tree down to about 500 micron, that's the spatial resolution that you have in a coronary angiogram proximate, you have a similar behavior and for the three trees. And here would be the, from the slope of that line is basically your K value. So we are interested to measure FFR, and FFR is Q in the flow in the disease state over the normal, so we will use the Kron volume to measure the normal flow. If we replace the Kron the normal flow with this parameter here, so we need to know the vascular volume here and K in order to measure FFR. So again, the parameters are Kron volume. We use densitometry to measure Kron volume, and then flow. We'll use first pass analysis for that. So we start with the lumen volume measurement using densitometry. In order to measure lumen volume in vivo, first you do a calibration where you have known amounts of known volumes of iodine or iodine mass, and that the calibration phantom is imaged over the chest of the patient or animal, and then you generate a calibration curve where integrated gray level is related to the volume. Then when you in a coronary angiogram, the integrated density within the ROI is then converted to the vascular volume. As you can see here, the assumption is that you have an undiluted contrast going into the coronary. And that is done when you inject contrast at a higher flow than the actual coronary. And 2 milliliter per second at baseline and 4 milliliter per second at maximum hyperemia, it consistently does that. Here is the validation. We compare the densitometry volume. So this is done in vivo. Compare it to the cast volume. So after, and this is done in a pig model. So after the experiment is done, the heart is removed, and then a cast is done using macrophiles, a polymer, and it's basically infused at the physiological pressure. Then the polymer hardens, then you remove the tissue, and you weigh the cast, and you know the density of the cast, and convert it to volume, and then you relate these two. So here is the cast volume, and here is the densitometry volume. You can see that they're correlated. So next we go to flow measurements done using first-pass analysis. The model consists of an input vessel here, a vascular volume, and a region of interest for measurement. You assume that you know the concentration of contrast coming in, similar to what I described earlier, and you measure the volume as of over time, so you have it basically delta V, changes in volume, and over time gives you flow. The assumption here is that you make the measurement before contrast starts to exit the system. So you have the flow measurement has to be done very quickly. For validation, we basically implanted flow probes. This is an ultrasound flow probe on the coronaries. Here's a flow probe for the proximal LAD. Here is on a branch of the LCX. Here are some phasic flow measurements comparing the ultrasound flow probe with the densitometry measurement. You can see that they agree for, this is for the LED. And if you go on a branch, you get similar results. Here is the validation using for mean flow measurement. That's what really we are interested in. Again, in vivo densitometry measurement compared to direct ultrasound flow measurements, you get pretty good correlation. We go to fractional flow reserve measurements. So we use the flow technique to measure the flow in the disease state directly. Then we use the crown volume to estimate what the flow would have been if that the vessel was not diseased. The model here is the pig model. We basically use the a balloon catheter to generate a stenosis. I don't know whether you can see it, but you can the artery is more there's no contrast here, so because there's a balloon there, so that's to generate a stenosis, and then distal to that point is a wire, it's a combo wire that measures both velocity and pressure. So this is the LAD. Most of the work was done in LAD, and this is the LCX. So again, here are the two ends of the balloon. Here's the wire where you measure both Doppler velocity and pressure. So you can see basically here, when the contrast is injected at high enough flow, you get some reflux of contrast. So that ensures undiluted bolus going through the coronaries. And in this, you can see first filling of the coronaries. Then at the end, you see actually coronary vein showing up. So one image per cardiac cycle is used to measure flow, and the flow is measured during the first cardiac cycle after the injection. The volume is measured after the artery is fully opacified. Here are some pressure and flow velocity measurement using the wire. You can see the ECG signal here on top, and then the pressure measurement in red is the aortic pressure. In yellow is the pressure distal to the stenosis. And here is velocity measurement during baseline. So this is a baseline measurement. Here is measurement after maximum hyperemia. It's done after injecting I think in this case was adenosine to get maximum hyperemia. So you can see the flow is increased, and also the pressure, you can see the pressure drop between the aorta and the distal part of the stenosis. Here again is some pressure and flow profiles. You can see the aortic pressure, then distal pressure here, and flow during resting. You can see that flow, and then when the contrast is injected, then fairly quickly the flow drops due to the contrast, and then you get a hyperemia. And here's where the images are acquired. FFR is done at maximum hyperemia, so all the FFR measurements are done at maximum hyperemia here, so you can see again, when you make the injection, the flow drops, but there is no additional increase in flow because the vascular bed is already vasodilated. So you can see the flow here, and here did not change. Here, it went up. And I want to emphasize our measurements is done during the first cardiac cycle. So this, it's done right after the injection. The flow measurement is done right at this point, because if you wait any longer, the flow drops due to the contrast. So so the measurement has to be done very quickly. Here is a relationship between normalized flow versus vascular volume. So from this, we can then determine K. Because in order to measure the normal flow, you need to have vascular volume. We have that. But you have to also determine K, the K value. So from this, we can do that. The K value is dependent on the driving pressure. So we determine this K as a function of the arterial pressure. So we have these two parameters. So if you have K and V, then you know the flow. So this here is in 10 animals comparing the measured fractional flow reserve using the pressure wire. So this is basically the validation using the pressure wire versus fractional flow reserve using images by themselves. So you can see fairly good correlation. Our next step is to do some additional animal studies, but then go to patient studies. Here are the people that actually did the work. This work is part of Jerry Wang's PhD thesis. He's an MD PhD student in the lab, and he's defending his thesis next month. And NIH for supporting the work. So